Last year, Adam and I and a few hundred friends of DeSoto gathered in the Masonic Lodge inside a cemetery in the heart of Hollywood. Were we there to practice some dark rite? Some sinister ritual designed to bring deceased Star Trek actors back to the plane of the living? To bring an unholy horde of undead nerd celebrities to Earth to consume the brains of the living? No, we were just doing our live show of the Share Your Embarrassment Tour. It's our review of Star Trek V, and we filmed it. We just wanted to let you know to get ready for that live stream announcement coming next week. If you're a Max Fun member and you support our shows, you'll get access to discounted tickets from membership at MaximumFun.org. So, good time to make sure those emails are delivering properly to your inbox. Either way, we'll be announcing ticket links soon here and on our mailing list that you can sign up for at podshop.biz. The Share Your Embarrassment Tour is coming to your living room for one last stop, and you're not going to want to miss it.
Here's to the finest crew in Starfleet. Engage.
Welcome to The Greatest Generation. It's a Star Trek podcast by two guys who are a little bit embarrassed to have a Star Trek podcast. Not embarrassed about the Star Trek part, mind you, just the podcast part. I'm Adam Pranica.
I'm Benjamin R. Harrison.
How are you doing, Ben?
I'm good, Adam.
We so rarely check in with each other.
Gotta check in with each other sometimes. I have been singing myself a little song around the house that I thought you and our viewers might find amusing.
If it's the life form song, I'm gonna rip off my headphones.
This is a song that, like, I don't know that I would reveal this to anybody but you and our listeners that I sing this song.
It's just you and me, Ben.
All right, let me see if I can. We, you, I just killed all the Hoosnack. Oh, brought Rashawn back to life. I'm a man of special conscience. You have no law to fit my crime.
That was a delight.
Came up with that in the shower a couple of days ago, and it's like, it's been a big hit for me, and maybe the thing that is causing the most division and strife in my marriage currently.
Your nearly 2-octave vocal range is really impressive. Way to go down there and dig that out with the lower register. Good job,
I always
Ben.
Thought I was a bad singer, and then I realized it was just that I was trying to sing too high for where my voice goes.
Yeah. You found the sweet spot. That's why in the Drunk Shimoda song, you naturally went down and I naturally went high.
Yeah, it's we can harmonize fit. A little bit.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ebony and ivory, Adam. That's us.
Sure is. Can I also be ebony, or do I have to be ivory? I'm just assuming that you called ebony because of your deep voice.
Oh, I was thinking of it as the other way around, but I don't know why.
I don't think anyone has ever ascribed ebony to me.
I was thinking it would be fun to like lay a little music bed under that, but I don't know.
Those Weezer people are very litigious. But you also have a lawyer on your side. Ben, how did your wife take that song?
She doesn't listen to the show. She's never watched an episode of Star Trek The Next Generation. She doesn't like it. She doesn't like the voice. She thinks it's weird. And she doesn't know what any of the references are.
My wife can't hear the difference between Kevin and Buffalo Bill from Silence of the Lambs, so that's who she thinks I'm doing.
Well, in her defense, neither of us do particularly different Kevin and Buffalo Bills.
Would you exterminate all Hoosnack? I'd exterminate all Hoosnack. I'd exterminate them so fucking hard.
Is she a great big Hoosnack person?
It puts the music box in the basket. Or else it gets the ice cream again.
It does this whenever it's told. Goodbye, Hooshnack.
Pivot, Ben, pivot. You gotta get out of there. You're gonna let the impression tear you apart.
We have a big episode to talk about today, do we not?
Sure do, Ben. Let's get on into it. Let's lower ourselves into this warm mineral bath of season 6, episode 17.
Birthright.
Part 2.
This is becoming a speech.
You're the captain, sir. You're entitled.
Not entitled to ramble on about something everyone knows.
When we last saw our hero, Worf, he was deep behind enemy lines, watching Klingon babes bathe in the still waters of Lake Minnetonka.
I was worried that we, like, made ourselves seem like we were just perving on that scene in discussing it last time. What I was trying to say is, like, knock it off with that being a premise in movies and television. Nobody does this.
And what's going on here seems pretty pervy, doesn't it?
Man, we've got podcast fluid on both sides of the country right now.
Mm, indeed.
I mean, this episode picks up directly after the events of the preceding episode. It is a Riker fire to summer break amount of time passing.
I think this episode is especially notable for seeing behind Worf's eyebrows. I don't feel like we've seen him in profile very often. And in this episode, we see every corner of his face.
I've seen everything.
The camera is super close on Worf most of the time.
Yeah. Yeah, and you really get a picture for his eyebrow growth being completely unchecked.
It's the Worfiest Worf episode. Like, I think they let, like, 20 minutes go by before we check in with the entrepreneur at all. Like... And like we were saying with the data stuff from last episode, like, that might as well not have happened.
Yeah.
As much discussion of it as we get in this episode.
Yeah, it's like they saw that it didn't work and then they just let it go.
Yeah, they're like, well, we could only rent that one wide angle lens for like a week, so we're just going to have to write something that doesn't involve that.
So Worf is confused about a couple of things. First of all, he's confused that these older Klingons are still alive and they're in this prison. And he's also confused that they don't seem to want to escape. They have put down roots here, and they seem pretty content to be just, like, farming and turning their weapons into hoes.
Literal swords to plowshares, Adam.
They're sort of turned into Klingon Amish, aren't they?
This really confronts the kind of, like, ideology of Klingons with a... It's like a stress test on this kind of, like, premise that they've built. Like, what if you had some Klingons that had been forced into shame? Like, what happens to them? And several dozen of them all got knocked out, and when they came to, they were imprisoned by Romulans. So... they had no way to, like, die fighting rather than go as a prisoner. They were robbed of that right, which is, like, what all Klingons would want. Seems pretty convenient that the Romulans had a bomb that just knocked everybody out.
But also, like, we know suicide is a thing that exists in Klingon culture. These Klingon prisoners are surrounded by farm implements that used to be their weapons. If they felt that strongly about their honor, one would have assumed that they would have just killed themselves.
Right. Stuck a knife into their neck or whatever.
Maybe they just couldn't find the poison. Like, maybe when you commit suicide as a Klingon, you have to have, like, two-stage suicide authentication.
You mean like a...
The knife can't be the only thing that kills you. It has to be the poison, too.
The poison too. I was thinking you were saying that the poison is like epoxy, where there's like two parts that form a resin.
Yeah, yeah, and you can't really figure out why it smells so good.
Yeah, it's like it's chemically, but not harsh.
The story is about Worf kind of proselytizing to the Klingamish. And I don't think that's a good look for Worf. He comes across as very, like, evangelical Klingon. How did you take his whole deal? Like, he's doing his Tai Chi in public. He's a real rabble-rouser.
Yeah, well, like, Worf's whole dealio is that he's lived kind of isolated from his people his entire life and continues to. And so he's just gobsmacked when he finds some Klingons that aren't doing what he's doing, which is like being as Klingon-y as they possibly can at all times. Like Worf's whole identity is wrapped up in kind of his difference from his crewmates and stuff. And when these Klingons aren't bought in on that, it's incompatible with his worldview.
Worf's hypocrisy here is so, like, fuck you, Worf. If Klingon culture was so important to you, why are you sleeping on a soft bed on the Federation flagship? Like, go back to the Klingon homeworld and be a real Klingon if that's so important to you. Like, don't hate on these guys' farm utensils because they don't know the way of the warrior the way you do. I mean, you hunt fake boar on a holodeck. Like, what makes you Klingon king?
He's like trying to convert them, you know? He is a proselytizer, and it's like a lot of the time that comes in the form of somebody who's like got some deep-seated identity struggles of their own, you know, trying to kind of like self-actualize by spreading what they are.
Yeah, instead of being what they're spreading.
Right. So like he spends a lot of time telling the older Klingons that they should be ashamed, not for having been caught, but having like had children and subjecting them to the same shame that they have suffered in captivity.
I see the sadness in their eyes.
You know, the old ones are like at pains to prevent knowledge of this prison camp from ever reaching Kronos because they have, you know, former families that will bear this kind of this shame if it comes out. And so they've raised their kids like with a very different ethos. Like, oh yeah, it's cool that we're here living in peace with these Romulans.
Yeah, and sort of the warden of the whole place is this guy, Tokoth.
Here, Romulans and Klingons live in peace.
And he's sort of like the paternal prison warden figure whose main objective is just keeping stability and peace.
I won't allow you to destroy what we have.
Yeah, it's really kind of a Cool Hand Worf type situation. Where, Worf Worf's kind of a freewheeling rabble rouser, and this, he has a, what he has here is a failure to communicate with Tokoth.
He will eat like 50 Katarian eggs to win a contest.
Delicious. The other big storyline in this is the teen girl that he's sweet on, who he found bathing herself in the grotto. Like, he gets closer and closer to making out with her, and then figures out that she's Tokoth's child. Like, she's not a Klingon. She's half Klingon, half Romulan.
He goes in for some lobe biting, and he notices some points.
You are Romulan.
This is some racist shit.
How could your mother mate with a Romulan?
Why shouldn't she?
It is an obscenity.
Yeah, it's another look that is not a good look for Worf.
It's very weird. I mean,
he fell for a half-human, half-Klingon who's the mother of his child. Like,
right.
Where does he get off being so uppity about this?
Yeah, I mean,
she seems real young.
She was only 16 years old.
And I sort of thought that, like, Dorne saw Peace do getting his beef wet in the last episode and was like, gonna have to get me some of that.
I mean, she doesn't just seem young. She seems like naive and impressionable, which is, I think, what's especially skeevy about this is like Worf was definitely not observing the campsite rule in this relationship.
He also tells her later on that he loves her.
I love you.
Really?
What the hell is going on with television writers?
Come on, Worf. Like, you could get to know her a little bit.
Yeah, maybe go out on a second date before you let that one drop.
Also, like 10 minutes before, Worf thought she was a literal abomination.
Yeah. It's weird. So we find out that Worf is like an alt-right activist, and he has a little like confrontation with Tokoth, who is like, Doug, Romulans and Klingons do nothing but cut each other's heads off all the time. Look at this. I've built a society where we're chilling and it's fine. And maybe give that a chance before you write it off. And like Worf attempts to escape right after this, and he like makes it over the wall. He's like almost to Lofi Hoggett's ship when one of the young like teen Klingon boys tackles him. Just like a pretty amazing flying tackle move. Gets Worf on the ground, and Lofi Hoggett runs off into the friskillating dusklight.
Yeah, and Worf sort of leans up, and he's got two cat basket phasers pointed at each temple.
Yeah. I love the little, like, come here, Farmer Hoggett. that little gesture. Oh, man. Fun. They really emptied out a couple of Ace Garden Centers for this... this jungle chase.
This set looked a lot better at night, Ben.
Yeah.
Tell you that much. Under the harsh light of day, I mean, we're right back. We're right back on that planet where Captain Clearasil was, remember?
Yeah, the Echo Papa.
Yeah.
We're back on that planet, but somehow the psych has moved 10 feet closer to the action.
Yep. So they bring Worf back to the camp, and they're like, look, man, you're going to have to learn to live with us, or we're going to have to kill you. And Worf, seeing that deal on the table, is like, okay, well, I'll take the former. And sort of sees his circumstance as a way to upend the hearts and minds of the prisoners as a different form of escape.
Yeah, they implant him with like a tracking. They like lowjack Worf. and like the second this happens, he walks out into the middle of the courtyard and starts doing his yoga practice, and it's kind of the mirror of the same scene in the last episode. Like he's fucking pissed, and he goes out to kind of like do a little yoga to take his mind off things, and all of the teen Klingons come around and they're like, what the fuck is this guy even doing? What is going on?
All the cool teens are watching.
Yeah,
what are you doing, nerd?
Bael, well, she comes up to him and she's like, I've been thinking about getting into the athleisure movement. tell me what you're working with here, buddy. And he says, these little exercises help me center my mind. And then Tok is like, hey, knock it off, asshole. And Tok is the one that tackled him on his way to the shuttle. And Worf does like the like flip him over the shoulder move and explains it's not just yoga. It's also the basis of Klingon combat.
Be formless, shapeless, like water.
Tok seems to appreciate being made an example of in front of his friends in a way that most teens would find deplorable.
Yeah.
Tok's not going to recover from that one socially. He's basically been Milhoused, right?
Yeah, maybe that's what motivates Tok to get, like, way in. Like, the pendulum really swings for Tok. Like,
it sure does.
Like, he's like, well, now I have to really, like, overcompensate and show everybody what a tough guy I am.
Like, he's totally ostracized from his own people. He has no choice but to join Worf.
Yeah. And meanwhile, Bael shows Worf, like, the secret chest of Klingon ephemera in her mom's bedroom. It's like, I don't know, knives and armor and shit. And it seems like it's sort of a prelude to a kinky hookup when Mod Duke barges in and is like,
put that away at once.
What are you doing in my weird under-the-bed trunk? You didn't dig too deep, did you?
Go!
All the ceilings are so low in this prison.
Yeah.
It's not quite the gilded cage that Tokoth makes it out to be. Very brutalist architecture.
Made for a different height of prisoner, probably.
Yeah, Worf has to duck a couple of times because the ceilings are so low.
Doesn't look super comfortable in spite of all the square footage. Worf's got one of those shitty, like, camp corrugated foam pads on his concrete bed.
Yeah.
Those things aren't comfortable. They always look more comfortable than they are.
Something kind of interesting about this prison, though, is all the doors are like doors with handles on hinges.
Yeah.
And Worf seems fine with them. Which is really weird, because door with handle on hinge is a little bit more complicated than sliding door. But Worf sucks at sliding door.
It's so hard to predict what will confound him when it comes to entrance and egress. She, like, this daughter puts on a necklace, and Worf explains to her, oh yeah, that's the necklace that says a girl is ready to do it.
Yeah, that's the Klingon Horgon.
Yeah. Yeah, and Mom's walks in just in the nick of time.
Yeah, saved by the bell, kind of a deal.
Worf, on his way, he goes out into the plaza, and he sees a bunch of Klingons play like Klingon horseshoes. They're like playing lawn darts and stuff like sort of party games, but much like the guy farming with like a battle axe. these things they're using in the games have like a practical Klingon historical application.
Yeah. It's amazing that the Romulan prison guards have allowed the Klingons to have all these weapons, right?
It's not like they look at a spear and think like, oh, this would be good to like make sure a tree grows up straight. Like a spear looks like a weapon. Right?
Yeah.
No matter like, what your culture is.
None of the shit that the Klingons have here in this prison would get through TSA. Like, like everything is bladed or super pointy or otherwise terrifyingly dangerous.
Even the hula hoop is dangerous.
Yeah.
And we put a little sand inside to make the experience more pleasant.
Yeah. So, and like Worf is like telling them all about Kales, the Klingon Moses, and eventually, like, he convinces Tok, the guy that tackled him, to go on a Klingon ritual hunt with him, which takes the form of, like, two potted ferns being pushed aside and them, like, exchanging, like, three or four words and then, you know, moving past it. And then smash cut to, like, Shabbat dinner at the Klingon Romulan compound, and Worf and Tok come in, and Tok has a disgusting, like, field-dressed goat or something.
Get that off my table.
I thought for sure they were going to hunt that snake that we heard about in part one.
Yeah, whatever happened to that snake?
Yeah.
And Tok walks in and, you know, plops it down on the head table, and Tokoth is like, get that shit the fuck out of here. That's not kosher.
Yeah, it really grosses him out.
He's not into it.
He's eating, like, potato salad or something.
Maybe, like, the Romulans are, like they're halal and the Klingons are kosher. And so it's, like, similar but not really the same set of rules.
I could buy that.
Yeah. So this hunk of meat gets the Klingons really, really jacked, but the Romulans are all really disgusted. And then Tok launches into a rousing bit of Klingon music, and somehow all the Klingons, even the young ones, seem to know this song.
Yeah, I mean, throughout this episode, we're hearing murmurs about a familiarity, right? Like, in the way that the implements are vaguely familiar, but their use is different. Like, these are warrior songs. These are songs that Klingons sing to go into battle and stuff, but they were being reappropriated as things like lullabies in this culture.
Yeah. So, they, you know, dinner basically is all but ruined because all the Klingons are now singing with Tok, and Tokoth is like, Worf, like, let's have a word, buddy.
It is a guiding principle with Starfleet's base. Now, if you can't find it within yourself to stand up, tell the truth, you don't deserve to wear that uniform.
Like the teacher holds him after class.
Yeah, the bell rings and everybody starts filing out.
Is physics class a really appropriate place to sing that song? I don't think so.
Yeah. Yeah. It's not that it's not a good song, Worf. It's that you've got to pick your moments.
Look, I don't want to have to do this, but I don't think you're going to be going to track practice this week. You can forget about going to the meet on Friday.
Is Tokoth the same guy that they delivered the Vulcan ambassador who was secretly a Romulan spy to? You remember that guy?
I do.
He's like, hello.
I
you're
do.
You're not going to do anything.
The main way that Tokoth is so interesting to me are his ears. What the hell happened to his ears?
Yeah, the loaf is either really sloppy or meant to imply that, like, he's got, like, loaf scars.
His ears look like he tried to wax them at home. And that wax was just too damn hot.
He ordered some a waxing kit off of late night infomercial.
Yeah.
And then by the time he comes around for the civil lawsuit, the company has disappeared from the face of the earth. Can't find anybody to sue.
I think we know from this and many other examples that grooming isn't very top of mind in Romulan culture.
Yeah, they want to use a Flobee and never think about their look ever again.
Yeah,
he does have lighter hair than your average Romulan. He almost looked like that human guy.
I just thought it was because he was outside so much.
Oh yeah,
he's got that real California blonde thing going on.
Maybe he sprayed a little sun in and it hit his ear and he got like a very bad sunburn. Is that what happened?
That's the headcanon right there.
Yeah.
It's a sun in related injury.
I actually had, do you know about the margarita burn, Adam?
I do. The bike riding margarita burn.
Yeah. If you get lime juice or lemon juice on your skin and then go out in the sun, it can like multiply amplify the effect of the sun. And
which means you got hella drunk.
I wasn't even that drunk. I made a little go juice to take to the beach with a big group, and everybody had a little bit, but nobody got twisted.
So did you go into the water? Like, not even the water could rinse off the lemon and lime juice?
I did go into the water, but I think it must have happened on the bike ride there, because from where we live in Brooklyn, it is a solid 50 to 60 minute bike ride to the beach.
Oh, boy.
Yeah.
And you had to get all bandaged up and stuff too, right?
Yeah. I was in a meeting at work the next week, and like, somebody just like noticed it all of a sudden. It was like, oh my God.
New guy's in the corner puking his guts out.
What the hell is going on? It's like, yeah, I've been, my hand has looked like this for 3 days, guys.
Ben, speaking of the strange maladies that have befallen you, it's time to do our regular check-in. Ben, how's your chest now been?
Oh, my chest nubbin. I actually have a very timely update on my chest nubbin. I was at the dermatologist this morning.
Whoa!
And I got some steroids injected into it.
How about that?
Yeah.
Already going to work, huh?
Yeah. So,
Is there a tingle to let you know that it's working?
It's still there, but...
Does your nubbin have a mustache from the steroids?
It's taking over, Adam.
Is it deadlifting 400 pounds?
it's got a lot of placements in bodybuilding and weightlifting contests around the world, but they all have asterisks next to them.
So I'm not going to be able to count on you joining the poppers craze on YouTube. It's not going to happen.
I'll watch it, but I don't think I'm ever going to contribute to it. Kind of like porn, you know?
Oh, well, that's where you and I are very different, I guess.
Like, Tokoth sees the kind of fabric of the little roost that he rules coming apart. And, you know, it's Worf's fault. So he gives Worf a deal. He's like, we can do this the easy way, Worf, where you become docile like all these other Klingons, and you can hang out here, and we'll let you live, and you can, I don't know, get into warrior poetry or something.
Or I will have you. Put to death.
We can firing squad you, like one or the other, your choice. And Worf, to his credit, I guess, sticks to his guns, you know?
Worf chooses the data door.
Yeah. And so, like, he's like, hanging out in his prison cell, and Bael comes and is like, I heard you're going to be getting killed, so...
I heard about what's happening later, W/R/T execution.
Phaser set to gore. Is that right? And Worf is like, yeah, like, here's the deal. This death is honorable, whereas living here like you guys live is not. And I'm not going to subject myself to that. Like, I don't want to die here, but that's what it's going to have to be. And she's like, but don't you love me?
For as many times as Worf, to their face, insults these people about their lack of culture, no one ever takes offense.
Yeah.
You know? Like, Bael is offended at being called, like, a rulatto. But, like, no one at the camp is offended at Worf, you know, chastising them for not practicing their culture, which I think is strange. Like, I guess as a viewer, you're supposed to see this in Worf's eyes and you're supposed to agree with him and his take on the thing, but I just never did.
Yeah. I can't believe you will say rulatto and then I get in trouble for fucking Romulan portmanteaus. That's the most offensive thing you've ever said on the show.
Oh, boy.
Yeah, you're not. I don't think you're endorsing the term, but it is, like, almost a racial epithet, if not full-blown racial epithet. I mean, maybe people will write in and tell you what a monster you are.
I love the idea that I take so much umbrage in your portmanteaus, and, like, I decide to make that one mine.
You're a fucking dick.
If anyone deserves to use it, it's you.
But I will not.
Oh, you're so much better than me.
Yeah, I'm trying to run a woke Star Trek podcast around here.
Well, congratulations.
My love is a fever, long and chill for that, which longer nurses the disease. You'll have to go again.
It is such a strange episode. It's you know, like the karate, like the theory about the Karate Kid that Daniel-san is actually the bad guy. Like,
yeah, yeah.
It's kind of like that, where it's like all of the kind of direction is around Worf being the protagonist. But if you step back and look at it, it's like these guys were happy and living peacefully, and like this young girl had no like shame.
Yeah,
like about being half Romulan, half Klingon. Like one, like the point she makes at the end is like, listen, like I don't want to go anywhere because you've made it pretty clear that all Klingons will find me repulsive and so too will all Romulans. Like this is the only safe space for me in the fucking galaxy. Thanks a lot, asshole. Like thanks for exposing me to that horrible truth.
Yeah, the scales of happiness have fallen from my eyes.
Yeah.
If this was the only episode of Star Trek The Next Generation you ever saw, like, you would have to believe that Worf is the antagonist here.
And it basically destroys this community. It's an unlikely community, and Worf's presence in it is so toxic that all of the parents have to give up their children. Like, they will not be permitted to continue to build a society here, which is like an interesting experiment, right? Like, what if Worf leaves and they just keep having this planet?
Worf is like Rumspringa incarnate, isn't he?
They walk him out into the probably too small courtyard to be believable, and they're gonna do death by firing squad. Worf has not changed out of his karate uniform the entire time, by the way.
That thing has got a reek.
Yeah. Like, this is two missions plus running around in the jungle. Man.
I thought this form of death would be pretty lame. Like, Worf is all about wanting to take the way out of the warrior, and execution is that way. But to go out in a instead of like have knives thrown at him or something, that can't feel good.
What's the deal with a firing squad? Everybody gets a blank except for one, so you don't know if you were the one to do the murder.
I thought only one person had the blank, so that everyone would have plausible deniability.
That makes a little bit more sense. So you're a little bit more sure that at least a couple of the bullets are gonna.
Yeah, because if the one guy with the bullet missed, that'd be rough. You hear 10 gunshots.
Oh, it went through his ear. Oh.
Maybe.
But how do you do it with phasers?
Worf would think he's the second coming of Kalis.
Do you set all the phasers on kill, but one is on stun, and then you tape over the screen that shows what setting they're on?
It's got to be it, right? Or like one of the baskets, one of the kitten baskets is empty. Like, you can't look down. You just got to reach into the basket.
I have to watch this back on slow motion and see if there's gaff tape on the hand phasers that the Romulans are using.
So they totally do that I Am Spartacus thing at the end. Worf's ready to eat a couple of laser beams to the dome.
They say, Worf, do you have any final requests? And he requests a tombstone pizza.
So Tok bursts from stage left in full Klingon regalia. And like a man in a too heavy suit of armor charges over and steps in front of Worf, and he's like,
if you kill him, you will have to kill me.
And then one by one, the rest of the crew steps into that side downrange of the kitten basket people and are like, me too.
Yeah.
This doesn't go over well with T'Koth. T'Koth began the whole exercise with, look, you guys, I really didn't want to do this, but you can see Worf is a real miscreant. He's disturbing the peace, and we've got to murder him in this town square. And then by the end, T'Koth, on the direction of his Klingon wife, sort of accepts the idea that, you know, the Klingon olds deserve this fate. The Klingon olds have accepted the terms of their imprisonment, but these kids don't deserve this. What if the kids go back home with Worf if they promise not to ever tell anyone their deep, dirty prison secret? And T'Koth seems to find this agreeable.
Yeah, it has to be a secret both to protect the Klingons, who are the old Klingons, like other families, and also to protect, I guess, the kids, like, sense of honor in their, like, reconnecting with their larger community. It's pretty wild, because, like, they beam up onto the entrepreneur, and Picard's like, what was that all about? And Worf is like, oh, yeah, like, I thought I was looking for my dad, but he's dead. These guys, I just happened to find them. They have nothing to do with that.
No one survived Khitomer.
And Picard's like, I'm picking up what you're putting down.
Yeah, it's a real wink-wink, nudge-nudge situation.
Did you think that it was implying that Picard is assuming, based on this, that Moog is still alive?
I didn't take it to mean that Picard's understanding was that granular. I just took it to mean that something was up on this planet, and for honor reasons, Worf can't tell him, and Picard is okay with that.
Yeah, I mean, surprising though, right? Because, I mean, maybe you don't want to rap about it in the transporter bay or whatever, but like, Picard knows all of Worf's dirty laundry.
Yeah. Yeah, if there's one person Worf is going to tell, it's going to be Picard.
Yeah.
So I guess burn victim Farmer Haga is free to patrol the galaxy. Nothing ever happens to him, right?
No, yeah, they never catch up with him.
And that's the end of the episode. Did you like what happened here?
I was not a huge fan of this episode. Yeah, I mean, I think that it does bad things to Worf's character, and while I think it's interesting, like, I think, like, the most interesting, like, most fertile thing to write about in this universe is the people that are really, really different from humans, that run their lives in a really different way. And, you know, like, this is a pretty crazy and slash unbelievable set of circumstances to get where you have a bunch of old Klingons who are totally unredeemable from an honor standpoint, but are also like trying to live ethical and moral lives despite that. And like, I think that you really have to be bringing your A game to expand the canon on something like that. And I don't think they did.
I think you could fix a lot of what's wrong with this episode by changing the way that Worf disseminates the information. Like, to these people, Worf is the first outside Klingon they've seen in a long, long time. And they never get a chance to ask him any questions because Worf is just telling them everything. Like, here's what you should be. Here's what you need to be. Here's what you're obligated to be. And I'm here to tell you why. But I think some of what irks me about how Worf conducts himself here is due to that proselytizing. Instead of like having the farmers be like, man, what's it like out there? What's the Klingon homeworld like? What is your deal? Like they don't get the opportunity to be curious. And curiosity is a great way to earn some interest, like as a type of person. Like I would be more interested in these farmers if they had any bit of that at all. But it is such a Worf-centric story that there's no room for it.
Yeah. The other characters are, for all intents and purposes, not in this episode. Like there are like a couple shots with like them doing some research on where Worf might be. Yeah, like it's almost entirely a Worf episode.
If you were to just read the episode capsule to this two-parter, really sounds interesting and good. It's really too bad that this was this story. You know?
Yeah. Well, do you want to go for a palate cleanser with a couple of priority one messages?
Yeah, let's take a couple of P1 shots.
Priority one message from Starfleet coming in on secured channel.
Need a supplemental income.
Supplemental income?
Supplemental.
Supplemental.
Yeah, it's extra.
By the interest alone, could be enough to buy this ship.
Adam, it looks like we've got a couple here. The first one is from Doe, second of two. And it's to Doe, first of two.
Is that spelled like the Doe or like the Deer Doe?
D-O-U-G-H. It goes like this. I'm crazy Spoonhead Picard. I've got a damn spoon on my head, and I'm crazy. Now give me some candy. Thwart the golden rule. Go play frisbee outside. It's gotten to the point where I can do myself without looking. Damn, boys, always pissing in the showers. Happy birthday, Doe. See you in Montana. Hope we meet neither Grizzly nor Uxbridge.
What was that?
I was really hoping you were going to know what that was. Because I don't know what it is.
I don't know what it is at all.
Well, this might be another one of those ones where we're getting duped into transmitting code for secret agents somewhere.
I would say maybe my one takeaway from that is if a Kevin Uxbridge is going to settle somewhere in the continental United States, Montana's probably the place, right?
Yeah, he likes to be left alone.
Either that or Malibu. He did like that Malibu beach home.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of Kevin, we have a second priority one message. It is from Kevin Uxbridge. It is for all viewers everywhere, and it goes like this.
About 1 month ago, I found this broken podcast. I went insane. My hatred exploded. And in an instant of grief, I viewed every episode. No, no, no. You don't understand the scope of my crime. I didn't view one episode or 100 or 1,000. I viewed them all. All episodes. Everywhere.
You have no lure to fit my crime.
Thanks for writing in, Kevin.
Yeah.
Always good to hear from you.
I guess it it would stand to reason that Kevin could listen, being that he's a Dowd and probably lives forever. I'm a little concerned that he's aware of our existence, because that does sort of expose us to the possibility that he imagines us not existing and therefore makes it so.
I love the idea of Kevin Uxbridge, like, slouched over a laptop, filling out a priority one message website form. I bet he's a hunt and peck typer.
Yeah, yeah. I had Mavis Beacon for a while, but I destroyed all Mavis Beacons everywhere.
Where are my AOL discs? I need to get on the internet.
I prefer Lycos or InfoSeek as search engines. AltaVista is also good.
Ben, if any of our viewers need to get on the internet, they don't need an AOL disc. They can go to MaximumFun.org/Jumbotron, where personal messages to all of our viewers everywhere are $100 and commercial messages are $200. And they're just a great, great way to keep us producing this here program.
They are indeed.
Hey, Ben.
What's that, Adam?
Did you find yourself a drunk Shimoda?
Drunk Shimoda!
I'm going to give mine to Tok, the teen Klingon. Just a fun line read he had when Worf suggests that they perhaps go on the ritual hunt, and he spits back, "The hunt? We have replicators!"
Worf enjoyed the pasta from part one so much that I think that would be okay for him, right?
Yeah. Ritually hunt a replicator, Worf. How about yourself? Did you have a drunk Shimoda?
I am going to give my Shimoda to Tokoth's wife, Jor-El. And because she embodies, in a couple of different ways, like how far the warrior spirit has fallen. You know, first of all, like in the trunk she keeps underneath her bed, but maybe most of all, the pink bathrobe warrior's uniform that she wears. Like, it is like...
Man, that looked purple on my TV.
Tufted, purple, terry cloth robe.
Yeah.
Like, fully...
It looks super comfy.
Fully embracing, like, the comfort quotient of a real handsome lady.
Yeah. I mean, some of the younger Klingons have adopted kind of like a Jedi costume.
Yeah.
But the old ones are really like... It's all pajamas all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, they're going out in sweatpants.
You're telling the world, I give up. I can't compete in normal society. I'm miserable, so I might as well be comfortable.
They're living in a gated community in Florida. Like, this is not, like they don't need to worry about presenting themselves that much anymore.
We've been saying this forever, Ben. You should always try to look your best, even when you're locked inside of a Romulan prison camp.
Yeah. Just because you're going for the early bird at the Denny's doesn't mean you don't, clean yourself up a little bit. It's just a sign of respect to the people around you.
Yeah. Try a little harder, Tokoth's wife.
The Romulans are all keeping it pretty high and tight.
Yeah.
The Klingons are just letting it all hang out. No wonder there's so much racial animus between them.
Tomok and Jalad at Tanagra.
We do an embarrassing Star Trek podcast, and a big part of our success is owning that, being ourselves in all our embarrassing glory. But what if we didn't? What if we were just a Star Trek podcast? No embarrassment, no comedy, just Star Trek podcast. If you're somebody who wants a website, you could go generic and bland and one size fits all on a social media platform. Or you could buy a custom URL and design a custom website with Squarespace. Squarespace is the all-in-one platform for all kinds of people to stand out and succeed online. Squarespace makes it easy to create a beautiful website, engage with your audience, and sell anything from products to content to time, all in one place, all on your terms. So whoever you are, or whatever you're trying to do, own it with Squarespace. Go to squarespace.com for a free trial, and when you're ready to launch, go to squarespace.com/scarves. to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or domain. Things just taste better when someone else makes them, right? It doesn't matter if it's a sandwich or a cocktail. There's just something that makes those things a bit more enjoyable. If I wanted a meal made by a chef, I could leave the house and go to a restaurant, or I could put a Factor meal into the microwave. That's because all of Factor's fresh, never frozen meals are chef-crafted and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. They have a menu of 35 options that changes weekly, and they've got 60 add-on options every week, like breakfast, on-the-go, lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. Head to factormeals.com/scarves50 and use the code SCARVES50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box. That's code SCARVES50 at factormeals.com/scarves50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
It's Webby season. Hi, I'm Sequoia Holmes, host of the Black People Love Paramore podcast, and we are nominated for a Webby for the episode where I interviewed Hayley Williams. In case you're unfamiliar, Black People Love Paramore is a podcast delving into the common and uncommon interests of Black people in order to help us feel more seen. We would love your vote to help us win this Webby. Please take a second, go over to the Black People Love Paramore podcast social media accounts, and you can find them at BPLP Pod across all social media platforms. Hit the link in bio and vote for Black People Love Paramore.
Hi, I'm Travis McElroy.
And I'm Teresa McElroy.
And we're the host of Schmanners.
We don't believe that etiquette should be used to judge other people.
No, on Schmanners, we see etiquette as a way to navigate social situations with confidence.
So if that sounds like something you're into,
join us every Friday on Maximum Fun, wherever you get your podcasts.
Ben, what do we have coming up on the next episode?
The next episode is Season 6, Episode 18, Starship Mine. When the entrepreneur is bombarded with lethal rays, Picard is trapped on board with a band of interstellar thieves. Do you remember this episode, Adam?
This episode does not star Dennis Quaid and Louis Gossett Jr., does it?
Of course,
from the hit film...
From Enemy Mine.
Yeah. I was going to give you a lifeline, but you already know.
No, I know what movie you're talking about. The Shittiest Darmok.
Oh, yeah. Very, very shitty.
No, this is not that. It's more of a, like, the inside man in space. This will be an episode where we can see if this show can redeem its Star Trek is a place status for you, Adam.
This is one of my favorite episodes.
Yeah, it's a mountain episode for me, for sure.
Absolutely. Can't wait to see it. And we will.
We have no vetoes, so we can't even jokily try and cancel this one.
No jokes. You're the joke.
Well, that just about does it. We should thank our viewers who go on iTunes and leave us nice glowing reviews. That really helps get the word out about the program. Helps us stay in the running for the algorithms over there at iTunes. We should thank the great people that go to MaximumFun.org/donate and contribute to the program. Big help. Keeps us motivated to do this bad boy. And we should thank... Who should we thank? Adam Ragusea for making all this great custom music for our program, and Dark Materia, who made the theme music for our program without even realizing he was doing it, man. I think at this point our tour has been announced, so if you have not caught one of the announcements, go on our Facebook page or MaximumFun.org for... info about that. I think tickets should be on sale if not already sold out. Dang.
That would be great.
That would be great.
Get them while they're hot. Get them while we're hot.
We sold out our last tour much more quickly than we expected, so if you see that tickets are still available for a show and you can get to it, snap them up. Don't waffle on it, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's not just salesmanship. Like, we sold out, I think, 4 dates of the first tour we ever did in, I think, an hour and a half.
Yeah, and then people were really pissed at us, rightfully so, because we didn't really give anybody heads up about when they were going online.
Right.
So, that was our bad. Sorry.
Can't wait to see everyone out on the road, that's for sure. It's going to be fun.
Indeed. Well, with that, we will be back at you next week with another great episode of Star Trek The Next Generation, and an episode of The Greatest Generation that's trying to mimic small talk from behind a column.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Listener supported.